Hey everyone, welcome back to Whence Came You, your weekly Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. I'm your host, Brother Robert Johnson. This week I found this great piece, which I'd like to jump right into. I did want to mention that I couldn't find the author for this particular piece, but if between now and the time I upload the PDF for the app, I do find out who it is, I'll include that in the document. It's entitled The New Age, May of 1948. Encounters with adversity should not crush out life nor destroy its purposeful intent, happiness. In these encounters, men should learn the lessons of adversity, recognize their import, and through them eventually win. It is not necessary under adversity to go down to defeat. Adversity is not an absence of, but should reveal opportunity. Adversities are not a greased skid to oblivion, but with a knowledge of their instructional value and the available powers for their mastery constitute highways to happiness and to success. Opposition can be made to aid accomplishment. If you have planted in the wrong soil, have failed to water, or otherwise ignored the essentials to a successful crop, you do not rail at fate, repine, nor remain idle. You benefit by past mistakes, comply with the requirements of all that is really controlling, and ignoring whatever is erroneous. Live and work for the future, expectant of success. Save as it contributes to the future. The past is dead. Adversity, although ugly, is useful. For men to desire only the good is normal, but strive as they may for achievement of their concept of good, adversity does appear, and betimes so persistently that they wonder wherein it has its uses. Adversity is unwanted, but in a world of experiences in which all is in reality only good, that which is even temporarily general cannot be an unmixed evil. When in the midst of adversities, thought may therefore be profitably directed to their uses, to the end of good. Attempts to delineate adversity generally present only its ugliest aspects, emphasize that it is useless and not to be desired. Into this ugly and venomous setting, Posey, tearing aside the veil of limitation and ignorance, presents adversity to the beholding eye as a precious jewel made not only more beautiful by the contrast, but useful as a symbol of victory drawn from the environs of defeat. Adversity is not necessarily evil nor an adversary. It calls not so much for combat with the superior power of evil as it does for greater cooperation with the omnipotence of good. Encounters with adversity are intended to be helpful, not hurtful. They are valuable for these lessons they inculcate, and principle among these is that the only assured advance toward success, whatever that concept may be, is in accord with controlling law or right order. Instead of complaining at adversity, resignedly and inert through hopelessness, the time may be more profitably spent in an endeavor to determine solutions in accordance with right. This is one way, wisely, to forget seeming grievances and troubles. For to remove the cause of adversity is to open channels to prosperity. Loss, viewed aright, is gain. A right concept of adversity is essential to success. Otherwise, unsound thinking will result in misdoing, or worse still, in an idleness wherein the apathy of defeatism will displace the energies that properly should be utilized in accomplishment. It is seen that whatever opposes establishment of the utmost right must be destroyed, and that in this process are developed individual ability, reliability, endurance, and that constructive activity essential to success. Those who have experienced great adversities, if they be not self-indulgently crushed by their experiences, but instead cultivate an aptitude to cope with them, become the more capable to readily contend with still more acute circumstances and conditions if such should accumulate. A preparation through adversity which is not infrequently a boon. Not to go down before adversity and defeat is a proof of right and of power. The right which is might. From the vicissitudes of adversities may be evolved victory. Adversity is not of itself good, but may indicate to those who have strayed, or otherwise have valuable lessons to learn, the way to the good. Even to attempt the quote-unquote impossible under adversity may develop better methods that shall prove the previous concept of impossible to have been fallacious, and that which is then strenuously and rightly endeavored becomes an accomplished fact. One of the lessons of adversity is that men should endeavor at all times to build more securely to advantage experience fully. when that which was to have been our roof is torn away, and our shelter mercilessly exposed to opposing elements, it is at that time but the small consolation, as mayhap we shiver in the wet and cold and helplessly perceive the deterioration of our most treasured possessions, to know that the roof will replace the one destroyed will be made the more secure for this experience. But it would be imbecilic to fail to benefit by this encounter with that which seemed so adverse, nor properly re-roof because the first attempt had failed. Deportment under success may be a good indication of character, but the way men act during and toward those adversities is in a greater import. Encounters with adversity disclose not only the false and true in experience, but also of those looked upon as friends. An unexpected absence in genuine friends may indicate a need for greater self-reliance, or of being oneself more friendly. But if a pupil in the school of adversity has flunked, none should consider himself a willow in the hand of fate to inflict further castigation. It is the Borden duty of all to aid in every possible manner any who have flunked. None should be made needlessly to suffer because he is down merely upon the somewhat sanctimonious assumption that if he will but view his adversities philosophically and thus extract from the lees of life the sweet wines of experience, it will ultimately contribute to his individual success and probably to that of others. Opportunity to aid should ever be advantaged, for lessons are learned in many ways and in a diverse manner. Adversity is no respecter of persons or positions, or of place. If adversities outstrip earning power and old age finds its lessons still unlearned, this does not constitute grounds for further suffering. Punishment, in this particular, is not a human prerogative. The condition demands from humanity compassion and the helpful aid of adequate social benefits. All, no matter how well-intentioned, cannot so arise above adverse circumstances that they are assured graduation in the schoolings and life's lessons. Let us be compassionate and so avoid some of our needless encounters with group adversity. Adversity advantage may reveal individual injustices, the removal of which will make for greater social security for all. Adversities direct attention to lowering skies which cloud our clear title to the all of good. When the supreme grand architect of the universe drew the great designs for creation upon his infinite trestle board, he looked upon the work which he had done and declared that it was very good, and very good is infinitely good. So during periods of adversity we should see ourselves and others not as they mayhap see us, nor as we all too frequently and so falsely see ourselves, but as our Creator first saw us, and as we must always have remained on the retina of the eye of his mind, not as a failure in any sense, but the perfection of his image and likeness. It is largely our own and the lessons of others not learned aright, nor proper things appear awry. Failure of our plans or encounters with adversity is but hope deferred, and never should prove a rock upon which we make shipwreck of our common sense. Failure in any sense in which it can then be called failure should be but the basis of a more assured progress toward a better goal that we have previously failed to perceive. Do these thoughts help? You will uncover further advantages from them as you direct your thought constructively toward your encounters with adversity. All right, so last week we had our first guest contributor on the Midnight Freemason since I took over as a managing editor, and I have to say Brother Michael really brought it. It was a great piece, and we have some great things coming up as well. Remember, if you want to contribute something to the Midnight Freemasons, just email me the piece and a short biography and a picture of yourself to go along with it, and we'll get it up. I also wanted to say that I scheduled a few more interviews for this particular show coming in the next few weeks. One is with Brother William Wojtas, who is the curator of the Cup of Brotherly Love. Forgive me, brother, if I did say your last name incorrectly, but you can look forward to that interview in the next couple weeks. After that, I'll be talking with Brother Harper from the Living Stones magazine, who recently published his first book, and I have some other requests out there as well, and thanks to Brother Jeff Koch for these possible interviews that may come about, and I'll let you guys again know about those just as soon as I get some confirmations. The podcast Far From Centered with Brother Robert Lewis is taking off really well. They hashed out their iTunes stuff, and now I'm pretty stoked to report that you can now find it on iTunes. So show some love and give his show a listen. I think you guys will really enjoy it. It's a great show, and it's a variety show with great interviews, political rants, and the like. It's a fun show. It's co-hosted by Mike Dawson, who, if you don't know who he is, he's a tremendous voice talent, and he's the man behind the audio of the most popular podcast in the world, The Adam Carolla Show. So, a ton of talent. And also, I'm doing a weekly Famous Freemason as well for the show. So, you get double the Famous Freemason each week. I can only think of a few things better than that. Well, maybe more than a few, but hey, like I said, if you're looking for another great podcast experience, check that out. And speaking of great podcast experiences, now the time has come to actually tell you all that the other podcast I'm making appearances on is Brother Juan Sepulveda's The Winding Stairs podcast. Starting with episode 4, his latest, I'm on there delivering a Masonic conspiracy. Now, The Winding Stairs is an interesting Masonic show because you know how we say in Freemasonry makes good men better? Well, that's kind of how Brother Juan's approach is. He focuses on, or at least seems to me, human conditions and the lessons we learn in Freemasonry that kind of coincide with that. It's really cool. I hope you all like and subscribe to that podcast as well. And you can find links to those, the Far From Centered podcast and The Winding Stairs, on our website, wcypodcast.com, under Podcast Partners. And if you like, I encourage you to go visit farfromcentered.com and thewindingstairs.com to find out more. And better yet, drop Rob Lewis or Juan Sepulveda a line and let them know that you listen. These are fantastic programs by brothers who are just exceptional human beings and professionals at that. I wanted to let you all know also that I'm working on a couple of books as well, one of which I can't give you any details about yet because it is just that awesome, and we'll have to wait on that. It's going to blow all of your minds. The other is actually a book of my Masonic essays, which I'm finishing up, and I'll have it probably up in the iTunes bookstore, Kindle, and maybe even an audiobook on audible.com when it's done. That's going to be a few more months. All right, so let's move on to this week's Famous Freemason. This one is Brother Will Rogers. William Penn Adair, or Will Rogers, born November 4th, 1879, passed away on August 15th, 1935, was an American cowboy, vaudeville performer, humorous social commentator, and motion picture actor. He was one of the world's best-known celebrities in the 1920s and 1930s. Known as Oklahoma's favorite son, Rogers was born to a prominent Cherokee Nation family in Indian Territory, now part of Oklahoma. He traveled around the world three times, made 71 movies, 50 silent films, and 21 talking films. He wrote more than 4,000 nationally syndicated newspaper columns and became a world-famous figure. By the mid-1930s, Rogers was adored by the American people. He was the leading political wit of the progressive era and was the top-paid Hollywood movie star at the time. Rogers passed away in 1935 with aviator Wiley Post when their small plane crashed in Alaska. Will Rogers was born on the Dog Iron Ranch in the Indian Territory near the present day of Ologa, Oklahoma. The house he was born in had been built in 1875 and was known as the White House on the Verdigris River. His parents, Clement Van Rogers and Mary America Shrimsher, were both part Cherokee ancestry, making Rogers himself 932s, just over a quarter Cherokee. Roger quipped that his ancestors did not come over on the Mayflower, but they quote-unquote met the boat. His mother was a quarter Cherokee and is hereditary member of the Paint clan. She passed away when Will was 11, and his father remarried less than 2 years after the death of his mother. He was the youngest of 8 children. He was named for the Cherokee leader Colonel William Penn Adair. Only 3 of his siblings, sisters Sally, Clementine, Maud, Ethel, and Mary, survived into adulthood. He began his show business career as a trick roper in Texas Jack's Wild West Circus. Of this circus act, Rogers wrote, "Texas Jack had a little Wild West aggregation that visited the camps and did a tremendous business. I did some roping and riding, and Jack, who was one of the smartest showmen I ever knew, took a great interest in me. It was he who gave me the idea for my original stage act with my pony. I learned a lot about the show business from him. He could do a bum act with a rope that an ordinary man couldn't get away with, and make the audience think it was great. So I used to study him by the hour, and from him I learned the great secret of show business, knowing when to get off. It's the fellow who knows when to quit that the audience wants more of. Grateful for the guidance but anxious to move on, Rogers quit the circus and went to Australia. Texas Jack gave him a reference letter to the Worth Brothers Circus there, and Rogers continued to perform as a rider and trick roper and worked on his pony act. He returned to the United States in 1904 and began to try his roping skills on the vaudeville circuits. Hollywood discovered him in 1918, as Samuel Goldwyn gave him the title role in Laughing Bill Hyde. A 3-year contract with Goldwyn at a triple Broadway salary moved Rogers west. He bought a ranch in Santa Monica and set up his own production company. While Rogers enjoyed filming, his appearances in silent movies suffered from the obvious restrictions of silence, not the strongest medium for him since he had gained his fame as a commentator on the stage. It helped somewhat that he wrote a good many of the title cards appearing in his films. In 1923, he began a 1-year stint for Hal Roach and made 12 pictures. Among the films he made for Roach in 1924, 3 directed by Rob Wagner, 2 Wagons both covered, Going to Congress, and Our Congressman. He made 2 other features, Silent and a travelogue series in 1927, and did not return to the screen until his time in the talking movies began in 1929. With his voice becoming increasingly familiar to audiences, he was able to basically play himself without normal makeup in each film, managing an ad-lib and even work in his familiar commentaries on politics at times. The clean, moral tone of his films led to various public schools taking their classes during the school day to attend special showings of some of them. His most unusual role may have been in the first talking version of Mark Twain's novel A Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's Court. He popularly soared to new heights with films including Young as You Feel, Judge Priest, and Life Begins at 40 with Richard Cromwell and Rochelle Hudson. Rogers had some amazing political commentary. He thought that all campaigning was bunk. To prove his point, he mounted a mock campaign in 1928 for the presidency. His only vehicle was the pages of Life, a weekly humor magazine. Roger ran as the bunkless candidate on the anti-bunk party. His only campaign promise was that if elected, he would resign. He was initiated February 18, 1905, passed to the degree of Fellowcraft on March 10, 1906, and raised to the sublime degree of Master Mason on March 13, 1906. He was from Claremont Lodge, number 53, in Oklahoma. That's it for this week. Remember to check us out on Facebook and follow on Twitter at Whence Came You. You can find us on almost every other medium as well, including Tumblr, Pinterest, MySpace, Instagram, and most recently on WordPress, which is a mirror of our homepage, www.wcypodcast.com, which is also where you can support the show by grabbing our Android or Apple apps to listen streaming. And bonus features as well are on those apps. Also, there's a Stitcher Smart Radio option. Just make sure you register for free using the promo code WCYPodcast. And if apps aren't your thing, there is always the straight donation through our Donate to the Show button on our website. It's all safe, done through PayPal, and all the money goes right back into this show. And I'd like to thank brothers Cam and Patrick for your donations last week. You can also support the show by clicking the links for Onnit Labs on the right side of the page and buying yourself some all-natural great supplements and fitness equipment. And if you use the promo code WCY at checkout, you get 10% off. It's a win-win. Don't forget about all the work we do over at the Midnight Freemasons, so stop on by and read some great pieces 3 times a week, Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. And it's always new stuff. Until next week, everyone stay on the level. For Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson.